3, 2, 1, it's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Carissa, and we have a guest.
It's a guest.
Who's two of our favorite people.
And she said Shazam when we said
yeah,
it. At the same time, she's already caught on quicker than we did.
Also, like, when she saw us count down, her eyes got all big, which was super fun. And
I'm a bit of a fan.
There's so much fanning happening.
It's great. Yeah. Everybody in this room, this is like a mutual admiration society today. I like how we're always very coy about who we have, but it's in the title.
When did the music come in?
Hey. We're so at it. Hey, Kayla.
Hey, Carissa.
How are you today? We're in the same room.
Again.
It's so nice. It's way better recording this when I can look at your face, not on a screen with a 2-second delay.
Oh, yeah. Also, then I have to wait and go, where'd you go? And then Jeff has to edit, and it's really annoying. So, yeah. Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, good.
Good. Yesterday, we were supposed to record a podcast, but instead, we did data entry all day.
Yeah. So, an update on that real fast. Well, we have a lot of information
there
for
is
you. It's going to keep...
So much.
It's going to keep coming. We'll explain
data
to you, guest, that we're not going to say your name yet, what that means afterwards. But there's a lot going on. The episode of our announcement has not yet come out. But I don't like math anymore.
Yeah, no. Numbers are hard. Also, they make me sad. But part of the thing with doing, like, statistics and data entry is that Kayla and I had to make some decisions about, like, what's a unit, and now we're having these very intense conversations about categorization, and I genuinely, we had a conversation yesterday about whether or not categories are useful or not useful constructs, because we're just so far into the data that now nothing makes sense.
What we're saying is help.
Anyway.
That's where we're at with this project.
So today.
So second call for help.
Help.
Please.
Yeah. So if you have any data or you want to do data entry.
Do you know what would be fun is if we didn't talk about it and talk to our guest?
Yeah.
That's person, where we're at.
Yeah.
It's way more fun than talking about this project.
Yeah.
Hey, Carissa.
Yes, Kayla.
Did you know our guest today is the perfect combination of Charlie Chaplin and Lucille Ball?
What? No. But did you know that she is the curator of the best straitjacket routine I have ever seen? It was so good, it made me angry.
I like those routines.
Ugh, it's just so good.
Did you know that our guest today is the curator and co-producer of Women in Vaudeville at the Bob Baker Marionette Theater here in Los Angeles?
What? No way!
I've done it. It's a hoot.
I want to do it. Do you know that she is also the writer and star of her one-woman show, Book of Love?
I've seen it. It's great.
Oh my goodness.
I am a fan.
I've heard so many people talk about that show.
You should watch it.
I'm so excited to watch it.
Did you know our guest was a street performer for 10 years?
10 years? That's too long. They don't do it for that long. Do you know that she's also an equity actress with a BFA in acting from the University of Connecticut?
Go Huskies.
Woo!
Women's basketball.
Woof, woof.
I'm a fan. Did you know our guest won the Best Juggler and Best Novelty Artist awards from the Association for the Promotion of Campus Activities and maybe the only woman to win these awards?
What? That's crazy. Do we have to do data entry for that as well?
I can't.
No. Okay. Do you know she's also a juggler, a physical comedian, a magician, a clown, an escape artist, and a jack of all trades in the variety industry?
Can
and
you
hilarious
be those many things?
Yeah. And a streamer for 10 years. When does she sleep?
We'll ask that. Did you know our guest was one of the premier performers at the Magic Castle and Brooklyn in Los Angeles?
That's insane. And do you know that Lindsay Desmond and Lindsay Banner are the same person? And I found that out yesterday.
Congrats!
And I was a fan of both of them. And then yesterday, in a very public way, found out they were the same human.
Which one do we have today?
We have both of them because they're the same person. I literally just said that.
Everyone, please welcome Lindsay Banner!
Hello.
Finally.
Oh, yes. Yes. You were so patient while we did the whole bit.
So patient. Didn't panic at all when you didn't respond to my gushing at how much I love your show. No, I handled it really well.
Yeah.
Reading that email thread back, which is like, hey, Lindsay, how are you? Hey, Kayla, doing great. Hey, wondering if you'd like to be on our podcast. Yeah, sure. I'm pretty busy coming up. But yeah, maybe we could talk about it. Yeah, that'd be great. Let's talk when we're less busy. Guys, I'm a fan. I mean, when can I be on it? Us not responding is it something I said?
Yeah. So good.
And it was genuinely one of the greatest email threads of my life.
So good. Yeah,
and here we are today.
Yeah.
So this I made it, guys. I made it.
So happy you did.
I'm here.
You made it in every sense of the word. Being on this podcast means you are a success.
I'm a success.
Yes.
No, I love what you guys are doing. You are a brilliant voice in this subject, and I can't thank you enough for what you guys are doing. You guys are doing the good work, so I appreciate it.
Could you, for an hour, talk about us?
Sure.
So I'm pretty sure it lines up that this will be our six-month anniversary episode, too. So it makes perfect sense for us to have somebody that we're a huge fan of who's like a huge fan of the podcast.
Perfect. Yes, I'll be referring to other episodes, and I'll be totally lucky about it.
So basically, all other episodes are the prerequisite for this episode. And also, Google both Lindsay Benner and Lindsay Desmond. Otherwise,
so much.
Yeah,
I don't actually know that. For
funny
sure.
stories. Alan Bursky was going around telling people that this Lindsay Doss man was stealing everything from Lindsay Benner, and it was funny to tell him that. He came up to me and said, "You got to check out this woman. She's stealing everything you do. Her name's Lindsay Doss Man." Like, what? I'm like, that's me. That's my new married name. It's all good.
Well, it's nice to know that if anybody came through and tried to steal stuff from you, there would be just like, it would be set on fire. That's nice.
I really appreciated the sentiment. It was really sweet.
That's adorable.
I love that. So we'll just get into a fun conversation. How was your holiday season?
It was super busy and super fun. I am now a mom. I have a one-year-old baby, and I have a house full of people that live in my house. I have three housemates that live in my house, and so I get to play mommy, and I did all of everybody's stocking, and we do a Secret Santa gift exchange, so everyone buys one present, and so we don't have to go crazy or anything, but it was fun. My mom's there. My mom lives about a mile away from me. So.
Oh, great.
That's great. And I had the best time. I cooked everyone a meal. I'm not really a cook, but I did it, and it wasn't stressful, and it was healthy, and it was beautiful. I had my cousins over. It was just a big family affair. It was like one of those, like, it just felt so great. And that was like, I did a woman in vaudeville the following week after Christmas. The week before, I did my big holiday party that I always do, which is a cookie decorating party, and so everyone comes over and decorates cookies. I have like every sprinkle you could ever want. I have I've done it. This was the seventh year in a row that I've done it. I'm very attached to it as a party, and I love throwing parties. That's like one of my hobbies, and so yeah. So I was very, very busy, and my son was born on December 30th. So we also had a birthday party for him. He's 1 year old now. It was just like bam, 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 bam. By the time January came around, and then I did a Peacock show January 5th. So like I was first time away from him. First time I flew away from the baby, which was both exciting and terrifying at the same time. Went very well. It was marvelous. Okay. And, you know, on the way there, I was super separation anxiety. But on the way home, I was like, oh, I'm a person. Oh, I can do what I want. I could read a magazine. I could have a conversation. I could watch a movie.
Look, there's no like human poop on me.
Yes. Look at me.
Produced by a 1-year-old.
Check me out. It was an insane time. Because I had a lot of personal and also professional things that are happening as you guys discussed in that wonderful episode on being a performer during the holidays. That was wonderful. I learned a lot. It was great.
Yeah, you should listen to that episode. I think this is the game. Can we refer to every previous episode on our 6-month anniversary?
Let me pull them up.
We'll start checking things off.
I think the only ones that I haven't heard, and I may be wrong, but I think the only ones I haven't heard were the live ones. So.
I was hoping you were going to say Max Maven, because that would really be a way to stick it to him. Not that I'm looking to, but I just want to report that back to him. Like, we had a guest on.
Oh, of course. You know, Max Maven was one of the first ones I listened to. I was like, John Max! I love Max.
He's right.
Yeah, he'll love that.
He will be really pleased.
I don't remember if it was the Why Women Are Terrible or I don't know. I it was somewhere around like your first few, and then I just got hooked, and I started from the beginning.
So we like, are your Bechdel cast. Have you started listening to the Bechdel cast?
No,
we're obsessed with it. It's also
worth like laughs like I every... do when I don't know what you're saying. What?
We're with you on that. So great. I also, just to like share a fun story, is I recall a year ago I did Women in Vaudeville, which was my first time doing it, I think, out of the two. Mm-hmm. And you were in a gold onesie jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm.
8 months pregnant?
Something like that.
Is that a correct... Large.
That was large.
You were of the larger size.
You know,
size.
That was the first month that I was officially like, you pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I came out and to my humps, my lovely lady lumps, wearing a sparkly onesie, very pregnant. Yes. It was fun.
One of the most wonderful moments that I've ever watched in a show, because it was like, this is the most you that could have ever happened.
It was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. I got that outfit with Marowa the Amazing. She was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to Slauson Super Mall, and we're going to go and get cat suits for you, pregnancy cat suits. And I was like, okay.
Are pregnancy cat suits a thing?
When they are now. They are with Marowa. I loved that. It's like when Marowa says that she, it was a terrible impression of her, by the way, but
when Marowa says,
let's go cat suit, pregnancy cat suit shopping, you say, yes, ma'am. When? I will be there. It was amazing. It was amazing.
That was also a nice reveal when I saw you at Booby Trap doing the straitjacket escape, because you couldn't tell until you got the straitjacket off. And I'm like, whoa, and she's super pregnant. She did like a really impressive straitjacket escape. And the reveal is, guys, I'm wicked pregnant. Because that would have been November.
Yeah, that was wicked pregnant.
Wicked pregnant.
Yeah.
Not that we're going to go in any sort of sequential order, but since we're on the topic of women in vaudeville,
yes.
I would love to know how you decided to do this show and how it sort of birthed. That word just was in my head because of the previous conversation.
All I can see in my head is a big... gold pregnant belly.
Yes.
I can't picture it. I can't escape.
And then it's just women in vaudeville.
Yeah.
How did that come about? What was that? How'd you go, this is what I want?
This lovely gentleman named Jeff the Storm wrote me an email saying, hey, I think it'd be great if you did an all-female variety show at the Bob Baker Marionette Theater. I think they were starting to work on planning more evening adult shows, not only for adults, but more evening entertainment, because they tend to do only children's shows during the day. And I was like, that sounds wonderful. I mean, I had been doing my own shows, producing my own shows in random spaces. Like I really do enjoy taking rough warehouse spaces and making them a little theatrical experience. That's fun for me. But it's even better to have a theater with lights and a curtain and all of the things that a theater has, and a staff and an office, and, you know, not doing everything by yourself. So I said, sure, that sounds marvelous. And we got together and we were talking about it. We were trying to figure out a title and whatnot. And I'll be honest, I don't really like calling it Women in Vaudeville. I don't like that. I don't like labeling it like that. I'd much rather just have it be a show, and you come in and you enjoy the show, and it's not like, you know, using the woman card, I guess. But it is an all-female variety show, and that's, I think, how we came to it. It was like, well, let's just advertise what it is in the title, and that it's variety, and that it, you know, vaudeville is, I guess, a nice way to say variety. It's more, I don't know. I think it's a fine title. I think it works to help sell the show. And hopefully eventually that I'll figure out a way to do that without being like, women,
you know? Well, it's tough because you want exactly what you're saying. Like, you want to advertise what it is so that people who are looking for that sort of thing can easily find you.
Yes.
But then it's exactly what you're saying. Like, Kayla and I ran into a similar problem when we were doing the all-women show for PCAM. And we were given permission to make all of the creative all of the creative decisions within reason for that show, and we all decided that we were going to call it Magicians No Wands Required, because people are already there, they're going to see the show, and so within that context, I think it made sense to not necessarily be like, this is the girl show, you guys. But I think for what you're doing, it makes sense, because you know, those, you want to tell people what it is, because a lot of people in LA are going to be seeking that out, and that's going to be why they're there, is because that's what they want,
and it's unusual,
and it's unusual,
and so because it's still unusual, it's a way to make pique people's interest. And I think ultimately that's what, when you're trying to sell a show and make sure that a show has a full audience, that's, you got to do that, you know? So, so when they invited me and I went and had a meeting with them, and that was great. They're just so great there. Mm. Alex and Jephtha, they're wonderful. And, I had done a show, I had done a Buskers Festival, a Victoria Buskers Festival, in 2011. And it was the first festival I had ever been to, Buskers Festival, that had a majority women. It wasn't, you know, all women, but it was a majority women. And, it was amazing. It was so different than, I mean, it wasn't like hugely different, but it was very different. Mm-hmm. And I saw three powerhouse solo female artists that I had never seen before. And I literally cried when I, each time I watched one of their shows, I cried a little, because it was just so, I was learning so much and I was enjoying it so thoroughly. And I had never seen that as an example before. And, you know, when you, I think when I started street performing, there were, you know, no women doing it. There was maybe one or two. It was very, very sparse. And that's part of the reason I think I ended up getting more into it, because it was, I got these opportunities that I was trying to be an actress, and then, the opportunities, I was a dime a dozen as an actress. And then I was starting to learn how to street perform in San Francisco. And then, I applied for a few, street performance festivals when I felt like I had a show that was ready for that. And I got the best festival my first year applying. Mm-hmm. You know, I got the World Buskers Festival in Christchurch. And I, you know, there was no other, I was the only solo female in that group. And so going from that experience where I was the only solo and female, and I only had 3 years under my belt, the other two women who were in the All-Star Airlines, they had 1 year at the time. So they were, like, all of the women there didn't have a lot of experience. Fast forward 10 years later, I'm doing this festival, and there's a few women who had, all the other women had started around the same time I did. So that was such an amazing thing to see. It's like these seeds got planted, and I was watching this amazing bloom of these well-seasoned performers with very particular points of view. Becky Hoops did this really great.
Becky Hoops is great.
She's great. She did this so wonderful, super crazy, the Barbie doll routine. I don't know.
Is that the balancing the Barbie doll?
No, she basically paints her face. She like puts these huge balloons in her shirt and paints her face. She just becomes this like clown bouffant of a female figure, you know, and just while hooping. And it's hard to explain what it was, but it was commentary and entertainment and disturbing and funny all at the same time. I mean, it really was a work of art. I thought it was amazing. And to see that on the street and to see women, you know, doing these things that were so, I mean, there's, you know, women are different, and to see that shining like that with the 10 years of experience behind them, it was so great. So fast forward again to now this opportunity to do an all female variety show. I looked back to what it felt like doing that Buskers Festival where there was a majority women, and how much I learned from that, and how relaxing it was to be around a lot of very powerful women, and thinking, yeah, well, let's create that environment here in Los Angeles and in my, you know, in my town.
Yeah.
So that was how it all came together. And I continue to love doing it. And I love curating. I love curating women, and I love working with women. And I love seeing particularly in the variety arts. I love seeing women. I'm not sure if I can really articulate exactly why. I think probably because I am a variety artist, and so seeing other variety artists that are have a similar perspective as I do, I find it funnier. But I just love the way women show in variety. I think I get the biggest kick out of it. So
I also think it's like, you know, magic wise, this is how I've always sort of thought of it. It's like, for so long I was the only girl. And it's basically like, if every single meal I ate a bowl of Cheerios, after a while, as much as I love Cheerios, after a while I'm like, oh, I never want Cheerios again. And then all of a sudden it's like,
Fruit Loops.
Fruit, yeah. Great. That's, I was going to say fruit. Oh. And then you went Fruit Loops.
I'm just helping.
I love it.
Cereal category. Right. I understand.
Yes,
understand. Yes, and. Yes, and.
Tired. And then it's something, it's just different. And you're like, this is a new part of my brain that wasn't functioning before. And so I love that. It's like, yes, finally.
Good point. Yeah, that it brings out a different part of your brain.
Also, I think that so
part of
often,
my brain that doesn't
the spilled
know
coffee
how to drink.
All over yourself.
Oh, sorry.
I think that so often within entertainment, the default narrative is the male narrative as well. And so we participate in this culture where, you know, the default narrative is the male narrative. We see the male narrative. And then you see the female narrative, and it's, you know, especially when it's like a strong female narrative, it's not that different, but it's just different enough that I found it like the first, like Kayla was the first woman I ever saw perform Magic Live, which is insane, like 4 years ago. And I remember watching it and thinking, oh, it's just a little different. But it made me very aware in that moment. Like, it wasn't until I saw Kayla do the bar act in the close-up room that I was like, oh, I've never seen a woman. And it, all at once, you kind of realize, like, this is a different perspective. This is a different narrative structure. This is a narrative structure that takes into account different social elements, and because all art is sort of a practice in empathy, it's interesting and fun to empathize with somebody that you're like, oh yeah, that's more kind of what I deal with in my day-to-day life.
Right.
So that, you know, there's lots of reasons why there need to be more female stories. How long have you been running Women in Vaudeville now? How many shows would you guess you've done, or do you know an exact number? We're obsessed with numbers.
Gosh, I am not so obsessed with numbers. I We've done pretty much one every month. I think we skipped 2 months when I had a baby. And then I think we skipped a month after summer because it was just crazy. Like, it was just, summer was too full for a lot of people. And I think we skipped September. Yeah. So I guess, I don't know, what's the math of that? I guess that's
a lot.
A few shows. Many. 12, 13, 14, something around 15, between 15 and 17 shows, something like
great.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great.
Yeah. It's been so fun.
And how many people do you think you have in the cast every single time?
Oh, I have four main variety artists and one sidekick, either musician or DJ. My friend Katrina is DJ Laptop. That's how it started.
That's great.
And then there was an organ that showed up at the theater. And so I was looking for an organist. What's great about social media and Facebook is, especially in Los Angeles, is that I can say, hey, I need a thing. I need this thing. And then people go, oh, there's that thing. And usually it's available to you. So that's been really fun in curating the show. Is I've gotten to know so many other art forms that I wouldn't have known before, like a beatboxer and a whistler, and you know, I've been really belly dancers, and you know, there's a plethora of people that would work for variety and artists that are looking to do stuff that are in Los Angeles, and it's such a colorful world of a lot of people who have very high skill, and that's been super fun to have an excuse to find people and learn about new groups that I hadn't known before.
Yeah. Well, and often like different communities, you know, one of the things that I've really felt here coming to LA more and more is that the first time I came here, I hated it here. I just thought way too Canadian for LA. and then slowly, because I got to hang out in different social groups, I found my people. And then now I love it here. And I think that what you do provides people with that as well, is that sometimes you think that you don't like the art form, or sometimes you think that you don't enjoy something. And then because you get to reach out to people and you have this safe space, and because you have that perspective of the street performing festival where you felt those feels, you know, you might be giving people an opportunity to explore their art form in a different way because they get to find their people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you felt that at all? Like, have you noticed that with your show that, you know, like there's a community that has come out of it that supports each other? Do you see the people that you kind of put together working on other projects?
I do. I see certain performers that have been in my show that maybe other variety artists hadn't known about, that then they start booking them in their show, and it becomes a sort of, you know, we absorb them, you know. And there's some great stuff happening in Los Angeles. Like Scott Neary's Booby Trap is wonderful, and that's weekly, which God love him. I don't know how Could he does a imagine? Weekly show. No, no.
Have we all seen the amount of energy that man has?
It's true. It's true.
It kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I saw him a couple days ago, and he looked real tired.
Oh, buddy.
I think he saved it for the show.
Yeah. He loves working. I think that's part. He really revels in it. So I think it's. As much as it's been a savior for everybody who's gotten a community out of it, I think it's also been a savior for him. He really loves it. And it's so sweet to see him connect with that. And I've known him since we were street performers in San Francisco. So that's been a really wonderful element of being in LA with people who I knew there, and especially Scott, is that, you know, there's something about someone who's been with you through all of the things that you've done and seen you go from, you know, a punk kid who doesn't know what they're doing to, you know, someone who's somewhat respected in their community. So, so you got Scott Neary's Booby Trap, you got my show, Women in Vaudeville, you've got Brooke Lidge doing variety stuff. So, and you've got the Magic Castle here, which is, I think, you know, that when I performed the first time at the Magic Castle, that's when everything blossomed for me and I found my people. And that was a really big moment for me, because I feel like I went from, you know, struggling to be all right to being, you know, I was good for a girl, for example. I that's how I really felt in the, like, I felt like that was sort of my report card. If people were like, oh, how's Lindsay, you know, as a street performer, she's like, she's good, you know, but not like, no gushing was ever done about me as a street performer. And I would not gush about myself as a street performer, because my heart wasn't in it. You know, my sort of intellect and strategy was, and it was what was available to me at the time, to perform and make a living performing. So I took it and I ran with it and I learned so much from it. But, when I started doing shows here in Los Angeles, and I then got booked at the Magic Castle, that, like, the first time I performed at the Magic Castle, and I'd been doing burlesque shows and stuff here just to get out of the house, and I created that show Book of Love, and Max saw it and was like, all right, great, we'll have you at the castle. And the first time I performed there, the first night, just all of these magicians who I didn't know at the time, all these magicians came back to me, you know, Jack and Sean and all these guys were just like, who are you? Where are you? You know, and I burst into tears, because I had been struggling so hard to be respected and good enough, and I knew that I wasn't. And it's so heartbreaking when you know you're not good.
Yeah,
you know, and
you don't know what the formula is to get from where you are to where you need to be.
Exactly, and you're just moving. You know, it's just keep moving forward. That's my mom gave me this really sweet metaphor right before I went to Christchurch. And I was literally like, I never have had panic attacks, but right before I went to Christchurch for the first time, I mean, literally, I'd never performed abroad. This was my first festival, and it was the biggest festival ever. I was 24. I was the only girl. I was just like, I saw a panic attack and what it could be like. You know, I was really panicking and I was trying to scramble and get myself ready and all that. And my mother, who's so wonderful and wise, she just said, you know, just take your lesson from the sumo wrestler, you know, who had just won the tournament of sumo wrestling and was interviewed by this sports interviewer and said, you just won. How did you do it? And he just said, I just kept moving forward. And that was it. That's how you win. You just keep moving forward. You know, that's all you have to do. You don't have to have the whole plan in your, it's nice to have a goal and nice to understand, but just keep moving forward. Yeah. That's the trick. Yeah.
I love that. I also love, like, we've talked a lot on the podcast before about how when you find your people that, you can listen to and trust and, all of that fun, you know, that is really a game changer.
Yeah.
What did that experience, if you could you dive into that more and like, what did that experience actually look like for you? What was it when you performed at the Magic Castle, everybody's gushing, you were like, I did something. And everybody liked it.
Cared.
What does it then look like turning that into, these are my people. These are the people I now creatively trust.
Time, one. I think even if someone enjoys what you do, it takes time dwelling with them and working with them to, you know, I remember one of the first times it was like early on in the Brooklidge days, and I was doing my act and I had a friend come record it, and they said, oh, so your community is really the magic community, huh? And I was like, maybe. Like, I didn't quite know yet, you know. Right. I mean I knew that I was doing stuff in the magic community and I was working with them, but I didn't really know I wasn't sure that I was one of them yet, you know. I still haven't joined the Magic Castle. I'm still not a member.
My favorite thing I've ever said.
Which I feel a little embarrassed about, honestly. I feel like I should be, because it's a wonderful club, and I don't know, you know. But I just feel so a part of it already that I don't feel, I haven't felt the push to join.
It took me about 2.5-3 years. Mm.
It's taken me 2 years. Yeah. I'll be joining this year.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it took time. I think that's a part of it. It's just, it took some time and some dwelling and creating relationships. And it's not something that is just a sudden, like, oh, I did a show and you liked it, and now we're really close, right?
It's like, well, and part of it, right, at least from my perspective, because I had a very similar story to you last November when I did the castle for the first time. And I was like, oh, no, everything's different now. But I don't know if this reflects your view, but there is a moment right after where I went, was that it? Is it different now, or is it over? Was that it?
Is that all there is?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that there's a fear to like get your membership or anything, because you're like, what if they only had a year? What if people only cared for a year? But people only care for 10 minutes. What if this doesn't last? But then I think that at this point, Lindsay, you can definitely be like, oh no, I'm here to stay. Yeah, like, every time anyone ever mentions Lindsay, if you've not been in the room when somebody brings her up who's seen the act, it is like gush central.
Yes,
yeah, the true. Magic community loves you so much.
And I love them. I love them very much. I love performing at the Magic Castle. It is really one of my favorite places. Brooklidge, Magic Castle, Peacock, these are like my favorite places to perform. And, you know, so I am so grateful, and the feeling is mutual. The love is mutual. I so love performing there. It's like, especially after street performing.
Yeah.
It was like, street performing can be so harsh, and the environment is so harsh, and the kind of formula you have to follow in order to make it work is, you know, and to have an audience that's dressed up, gussied, right, ready to go, it's like hot knife through butter. It's just so great.
Yeah, well, a part of it too is that I think, like, do you still have your hunter eyes from being a street performer? Because I think I always equated as, like, the years I spent on the street was when I was hunting, and now I fish in a stocked pond, right? You just throw it in.
I love it, that. And
back. Yeah. But I still have my hunter eyes. I can still, and I see it, like, Keith Fields. I remember the first time I ever saw Keith Fields lecture, and I went up to him afterwards, and I was like, I can smell street on you. Because you could just see him look, the way you, and I see that in your eyes. I don't know if you feel it on the inside, but, like, the way you look at a room, you're looking for who's gonna walk. You're still looking for your front edge. You're still, like, identifying people in the way you're, like, you still got that hunter vibe.
I don't think of it as a conscious thing, but sure, I think it's energetic for absolutely for sure. Where I can feel it's like it's that knowing, you know. I would feel this when I was building a crowd and I had been street performing a lot. Like if you're street performing a lot, there's this muscle that you build of building a crowd where you just know that they're going to be there. And if you haven't been doing it, you're not really sure that they're going to be there, and they can smell it, and then they won't. Mm-hmm. But if you know that you're going to get an edge, and you know that you're going to have a huge crowd, and you know that it's just a matter of time, then that they can smell that too, and they're like, "Well, what are you going to do?"
Yeah,
and then you get that crowd, and they're there. And I feel like it's a similar thing when I'm, especially when I'm doing something I'm very confident about, and I'm like, can't wait to show them, you know, which I feel that I still feel that way about Book of Love. I love doing it. And I love doing the straitjacket routine. And I love, you know, I've created a bunch. What's wonderful about Women in Vaudeville too, is that I have a platform to create more stuff, which is really fun for me because it's like, I usually do at least a couple acts in the show, because I book about four acts, and then I have the as I said before, I book about four acts, and I have the sidekick, and then I have a usually a roaming person, but before the show as well. And but I, you know, that's not always a full show, you know. Maybe it just depends on the people's acts. So I usually fill in a lot of the other time, and I get to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Which is really great.
It's so important to have some place to work on stuff.
Yeah.
We were talking about that. I don't know if that's just... Kayla and I started doing this thing where we're like, is this friendship or content? Like, we just check in with each other. I can't tell if this was a friendship conversation or a content conversation.
But... I can tell you. It's from your episode with Max Maven.
Ah!
And he was talking about how there's no place to be bad.
These days, there's no place to be bad. And I, you know, I would like to fix that.
This is my favorite moment in the podcast. I am delighted. That was conversational cupcakes. Anyway, continue.
Yeah.
Wow. Blown away.
I think that is a problem because here's the thing about variety and anything where there's no fourth wall is that you come up with an idea, right? And then you want to try it out. And trying it out means you're not always going to get it right the first time, you know, is what your concept was. But it's like, it's basically like having you have a concept, and that's your new instrument you're going to play, right? You come out to the audience and you've got to tune it in front of them. So it's basically like taking an instrument and going out to the audience and being like, does this sound right? Like, is this the right note? And then they'll tell you with their hatred or their love.
Oh my God.
Whether it's in tune.
That's the best metaphor ever.
And it would be so nice if we had an environment where we could tune it in front of people and actually, like, I've had this desire to create something, this basically a workshop called Hatch Labs for performers helping other performers, and you just get together and you do this in front of people with the intent of being able to just do it and be bad, or be, you know, basically tune your idea in front of people who can then go, yeah, that's in tune, or that's not in tune, or this is what I think would help get it in tune. That's crazy. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's terrible.
that's terrible. Which usually isn't the case, but I mean, or you can tell, you're like, that was terrible. I might've been high at the time. you know, but yeah, I may still do that. I did it years ago. I actually had a few of them, and we, you know, Scott and Erie came, and it was very sweet.
Wow,
we were working out new stuff, and you know, for a while I felt like that was booby trap could be that, but I appreciate that Scott needs the show to be consistent. And he needs the show. He needs you to do work that will entertain people and not just make them feel sad, like you do when you hear an out of tune cello. Although I really appreciate he has a very unique, and this is kind of the fun thing about these variety shows that are popping up that are being stoked here in Los Angeles is that. They are, whoever's curating them has a very particular taste and sensibility. And Scott has a very unique and wonderful sensibility. Erica Larson has a wonderful taste. I mean, she's seen it all, right? And so to see what she curates is wonderful. And I love her, and I love her shows tremendously. So Yeah. So anyway, Hatch Labs, look for it. I don't know if it'll, you know, I want it to happen.
I will be there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like it to be like a be monthly. Invited.
Yeah. We are writing our invitation.
Fabulous. Can we come, please?
Dance like cards taken.
Yay. Good. Yeah. Yeah. I had a great transition about 10 minutes ago.
Okay. I'm sorry. I could see it happen, and you're like pointing on
so
it.
So do you want to try and do your transition?
Yeah, I'm gonna bring it back in. Hey, do you remember when that time you talked about working in rough markets?
Yes.
Transition.
Transition.
How was your time in the college market?
Ah, yes.
Because
speaking of which, I honestly don't know how anybody works in the college market without having done street. Because it is street. in a totally different way, but it's like, wow. I mean, it's varied. It's very different. And I had this moment when I really wanted to get out of street performing, but I needed a way to make I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to replace it because there, I just didn't know how to replace it. But I saw, okay, what markets are there that I could do what I have? College market, everyone's like the college market. But how do you get into it? How do you do it? And I had a friend who had another friend who had, who knew an agent. And so he made a call and I got an agent to represent me. And he said, this is what you got to do. And so I went and I did a showcase and, I was nervous as hell. I mean, learning how to showcase is like its own muscle.
Yeah.
This is the thing. There's all these muscles, and if you just you got to understand that you've got to build the muscle, and before you decide whether it works or doesn't. So I went to four different showcases, spent money on four different showcases.
That's so much.
But it's a lot of money before. I mean, that's close to $4,000.
Yeah.
Before I started getting booked, but then once I started getting booked, it was. I mean, I was booking. I was one of the top bookers mm-hmm. for sure. And that was very rewarding. But because I knew, I was like, I know that I can do this. And me and my agent were like, why isn't it working? Because they loved me. They thought it was great. They were just, all they were talking about was how great, you know, that juggler girl was. But then they wouldn't book me. Yeah. Or they would say, oh, Valentine's Day. And that was it. And so we tried all these different, like, try taking out the book of love. Try doing your act without the book. We tried a showcase without the book to try and get them out of Valentine's Day. I put on a green dress instead of a red dress. I tried all these different things, and I don't know what happened. I honestly don't. I just went and just did my showcase, did the book of love, and then I started booking. And I honestly don't know what it was, but my suspicion is that it was that transition, the artist, that silent film, The Artist, won Best Picture. And they suddenly, it was a little bit in more popular culture of silence entertainment. It didn't seem so, I think they just didn't have a category to put me in. And suddenly they had a category to put me in. That was my guess. I still don't know though. I have no idea why it suddenly started working, but it did. And then when it did, it was gangbusters. And I, you know, my husband was like, you're going to be gone. I know why you're going to be, you know, I was like getting married and, you know, he was like, I'm not going to ever see you. And I'm like, that's weird.
Well, I mean, in a way, that's such a great piece of advice because sometimes you'll never be able to backtrack what made something work. And that's part of why it's almost worth like tweaking things sometimes at random.
Yeah.
And just being like, all right, today I'm going to this thing and today I'm going to that thing. And just like, you know, we talked about it within the podcast in the terms of like break it.
Yeah.
You know, you got to break it. Do the act with a limp. Do the act with, you know, different things to see how people react or how it changes. You always learn something.
Yeah.
And so you never know if maybe it was the artist. It's a really insightful thing to be like, oh, pop culture changed. And then they had a way of categorizing me. But it could have also just been, they'd seen you enough, they saw the perseverance, or there was something in the confidence, or one guy committed to booking it, then everyone was like, oh, I guess we could book it. You never know.
You don't.
But the important part of that story is that, you know, you stuck to it, but you also kept changing things. It wasn't like, well, it's not working, because I'm just going to keep doing the same thing forever and blame my public.
Coming from the opposite side, like, I've done both. I've been at a college conference and sort of both sides of it. And just knowing as a college student, you're looking at the act, you're like, that was so great. How fun. What did I see?
There's a lot.
What was it that I saw this weekend? I remember seeing 7 different jugglers in an hour.
Right.
Which one did I say I would book? And you just lose it. Because you are a college student and the actual adult that is supposed to be helping you is at the bar. And like, there's nothing. There's like no hope. And so it usually takes, after you see somebody a couple times, you're like, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Book of the book. The book one, the juggler, book the book. Her. Yeah. And then you got it. Mm. It just takes, it's just such a commitment to do the college market. But because of the joy of block booking, as soon as you get that one or two or and then as long as colleges are liking you and you're a pro, I love the college. I loved it.
Doing the college market?
Yeah, I mean, it was short-lived because I got the tour. But so I did not burn out, nor That's did wonderful. I have terrible audiences. Like, I was very lucky that that the audiences I had were of students that I understood.
Great.
Like East Coasty students of where I grew up and like, I get it. Because you did it vastly more than I did.
I did every kind of show you could do in the college market. So sometimes beautiful theaters and packed house, marvelous. Sometimes there were, it was the cafe and they're like, yeah, it's like literally as big as, you know, a small room in a house. And it's like a Starbucks and they just go, yeah, you're there. And you look over and there's like a speaker on a stand and I don't know, maybe about 4 feet by 5 feet. And you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm. I need a certain ceiling height for juggling, right?
Sure. I mean, I can make most things work, but it was just one of those moments. And for me, the getting out of the street performing and getting into, it got me off the streets. And I was able to, it's also college shows, so they didn't have to be there, so there's some shows that I would get to and they had not advertised it very well, or even if they had, students were like, they called me a mime and, that's the kiss of death. No one wants to go to see a mime. And so, there would be 2 people in the audience a minute to showtime. And I had some pictures of this where I'm like, there they are, my sweet devoted audience. And I would do a full show for like, 5 people.
Yep.
And that what was cool about that is that I really understood, I really got the lesson of the only thing that you have control over is your attitude. And I also found that I would, when I compared it to street performing, in street performing, the lesson I learned was the easier it is, the more you make. The more fun, and like you would do that for free, the more energy I would receive, the more money. And money is just this measurement of energy, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like this way, I had this different connection with money because it was a tipping system that I could tell, at a certain point you could just look at the hat and you knew exactly how much was in it. And I could feel how much was in the audience as I was giving my hat speech. All these really interesting dynamics that you get dialed into different energetically what is going on, right? And in college shows, I would, so the opposite would be true for street shows. The harder you worked, the more difficult it was, the less money you would make. Mm-hmm. And I hated that. I thought that was so unfair and so not, I was not one of those street performers who was like, all right, let's do a street show anywhere. Like there's some of these guys who would just be willing to do a street show any day. Days that I knew I was doing a street show, I kind of wanted to get hit by a truck just a little bit, and I was always nervous all through the 10 years that I did it. Every single time I had a street show to do, I was a little bit wanting to die. And I still get nervous before shows, as I think is appropriate. I think Carol Burnett had a whole bit about when she got she wasn't nervous one night going out because she was so super successful. This was early in her career, and she had done this comedy song and everybody loved it, and she did it on TV, and she was just thought she was hot stuff, and she went out there and she died. It was the first time she'd ever bombed, and she got nervous before the next show, and she was great again. She's like, oh, the nerves are just a part of of being present. And so anyway, so the wanting to die versus being nervous, a little different. But what I loved about in college shows, I was able to, contextualize it of like, look, I'm going to get paid the same amount, whether I have a good time or whether I have a bad time.
Yep.
So I better find a way to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And I better not mention that I am worried that it's going to be that time. That's a lesson learned, is that you don't ever mention that the environment kind of sucks. Like don't pay attention to it. Don't put energy on it. I've made that mistake many times where I'm like, well, I guess I'll try what I can with this environment. And everyone's like, meh, but I'm here.
Well, exactly. Because like you're mad at the people that aren't there, not the people that are there. And the people who find out are the people that are there. There was a couple of shows that we did where we just ended up, same kind of thing, like five people, college shows. But I was the events coordinator for the Alberta College of Art and Design for a year. Mm. And so I wouldn't just coordinate the shows. I'd also be in the situation where I'd see that happening and go, oh, well, I need to take responsibility for this. So we'd bring the chairs onto the stage and be like, all right, there's only 10 of us, but is this okay? This help? And just trying to bring that energy. That's such a good point that were you there at the show where we saw the performer just be like, you're not fun enough? It was at the castle.
You're not narrowing it down.
All right. So last week I was at the castle and this performer came out and they were a great crowd. It's the castle. It's always a great crowd.
Yeah.
See, but his perception was they were supposed to be more excited to be there. And he was doing that thing where he's just like...
Rookie mistake.
Yeah. Like half a... Yeah.
And that's a sign of a rookie to me.
Agreed.
Or really a rookie?
No. They should have known better.
Should have known better.
But
can you tell us the name after we're done recording?
Oh, I will definitely tell you the name. Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh. It was very bad. So part of it I've noticed is that I think like street performers tend to do that, in that there's all these lines you do on the street where you try and get people ramped up. Mm. But if you go, put your hands together, and then the audience puts their hands together, and you go like, more! But they just gave you something. It reminds us how not present you are. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're not really, you know who it is.
Sorry. Go ahead.
It just tells us you're not present. And so I love that point that you just made. I just wanted to reiterate and reinforce that point that you made about don't let them know that you're disappointed, because the other thing is that you're the expert. They're walking in there and they're going, I don't know what this is supposed to be like. You tell me.
Yeah. You're the teacher. If the teacher is like, I don't know what's going to happen. You're just like, oh no.
Why did I come to this? This is terrible.
then we're really screwed.
Yeah. I have seen successful comedy shows that have had, 12 people in the audience because the performer could handle it. And I've seen, we've all have. So that's such an amazing lesson, just to be like, I think that also comes down to whether or not you see entertainment as a gift that the audience gives you or a gift you give the audience.
Sure.
And I think you got to get out of that headspace of being like, oh, this is a thing I do because I love it. And you're all here to serve me and my ego and my priorities. And it's like, no, you spend all day making a present and then you give it to the audience. And even like, like in real life, if you get like, I made you this macaroni frame. I don't like it. Okay. Well, you don't have, I guess. That's fine. You're sad, but you don't show up and go, I gave you this macaroni frame. It's your job to spend 10 minutes showing.
What's wrong with you? You don't like it? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. You have no taste.
How come only two of you are enjoying it?
You're enjoying this macaroni
frame. Where's the rest of you? Bring them back so they can stare at my macaroni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many balls can you juggle?
Five.
That's really good. Five balls is impressive.
Yeah, but like with things on your head.
Yeah, she's really good. Anyway, okay, so.
It's so funny because as a juggler, I'm always very like, I'm not that great.
Oh, I know.
So it's like, but as an entertainer, I'm a fine juggler.
Yeah, five balls is you're a juggler.
Yeah.
You're a proper juggler.
But you know what? I've never been to a juggling convention or anything like that.
You ever to EJC or anything?
Mm-mm. Oh. No. I'm frightened. Jugglers frighten me.
Over the course of this podcast, we've spoken a lot about, consent and volunteers on stage, and there was the whole Andy Gross thing and all of the things that have happened. And Kayla and I have really tried very hard to talk about these in a way that's not accusatory, very informative. And one of the things that I brought up recently when I was talking to a group of people about this is, you know, in Alba's performance, when she puts her arms around the gentleman to do the gypsy thread, she asks, "May I put my arms around you?" And so there's this really nice moment. And I brought it up in a group that happened to be all men, and somebody sort of jumped on it and going, "Well, of course she should. Just because she's a woman doesn't mean..." And yeah, that's the point I was making, was that, you know, yes, everybody should yes, you know, be concerned about consent. And you have this phenomenal routine, the bell act, which we'll put in the notes, in the show notes, so people can see it.
Is that cool? Can we link to your
sure,
Vimeo
from the Magic Castle?
Absolutely. Okay, great. Absolutely.
Yeah, and would you like to explain sort of the premise of the piece?
It is sort of getting to know a guy, or sometimes it's the first date, and sometimes it's just sort of vetting him. And I have these two clerk bells that are on a coconut bra, and I put them on, and I have him, I basically like flirt with him through the bells, and every time he reacts to me, I ding my bells, and then I get him to play a song with me, or I go da 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 da, bing 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 bing, and then he has to bing the other boob. So that's basically that. And I do want to say, side note, I did not come up with that. I came up with a routine, but I didn't come up with a prop. The prop I saw in 2000 in up in Seattle in a circus there before I was a performer, that it sort of became the wind in my sails when I was trying to come up with material. And it was before I knew that wasn't cool to just look at a prop and then use the same prop. But it became such a big part of my show that I wanted to keep it, and it works so well for my character and everything. And eventually, I actually met the woman I believe her name is Janet McAlpern, but I need to double check that. So maybe we'll reference that in the
show notes.
In the show notes.
Check the show notes for credit.
Yeah, check the show notes for credit. And she she came up to me. She's like, "Hey, I also have a routine," because I didn't know who did. It was before I was a performer. I didn't know who did it. I just knew that maybe it was questionable that I was using this, this thing. And she was so, like, at first I could tell it was like this, like, "Rah." Like, "Oh, you got that from me and you didn't ask." And I was like, "I'm so sorry. I will take it out of my show if you want me to take it out. I didn't know who to ask. And it was so helpful for me. It was the wind in my sails." And she was so gracious about it. She said, "Just at any time I put it online, make sure it's there." And I think it's in my Vimeo, actually.
Oh, then if it's here, does it I will look.
If it's not, then I'm a terrible person.
No, but down here.
Yeah, yes. Janet McAlpin.
Yes, I decided I remembered it. Okay, great. But yeah, so that, and she was amazing and so sweet about it, and just said, yeah, that you can use it, just put that in there. And yeah, but the routine itself, I'd only seen it in the context of she used it in a game show. So every time someone got the right answer, her boobs would she would ring her boobs. And I just thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And so when I was trying to come up with my own act, I was like, how do I, that was so funny. I would love to use that in my act, because I think that's really unique and very feminine. And so that's the routine that I do. And that was, as soon as you asked me about it, I was like, oh no, I have to admit that I did a bad thing.
I think that's incredibly useful though, because, you know, Kayla and I have regret time on the podcast. Yeah. And as you know, cause you listen. Yeah. And regret I think time. It's extremely valuable, because if we go about this going, "Oh, you know, you can't ever do anything wrong." Mm. Then there's no room to apologize, sure, or to grow or to any of this. Mm-hmm. It is completely reasonable if you didn't know, like, you don't know what the culture is.
Yeah.
To see something and go, "Yeah, that's going to be me now." And then somebody, then you learn what the culture is. And then when you had the opportunity to make it right, you did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fantastic story. I'm so glad you shared that. Thank you.
Yeah.
One of the things that.
And it's different. You're
accurate.
Yeah. Different.
So accurate. Yes. One of the things that I found really great about when the first time I watched this, but then like watching it and learning, like, of course, having this podcast, is that there was actually a comment made on the Magic Castle forum in a discussion about consent by an audience volunteer.
Oh, I remember when that, a bunch of people contacted me about it.
Yeah.
And were like, "Hey, they're all talking about you and bleh."
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I would love to get your thoughts on how you approached this piece and either, knowing from the beginning or learning throughout time of its existence, is like, how did you work within consent of, have you ever had an audience volunteer go, I'm not touching you? How do you play with that? You obviously, I mean, just in your promo video, like as you're walking over, some guy's like, no problem, ding. And like how you play with that moment. And so how have you worked in the varying levels of consent that your audience gives you?
In the Vimeo video, that is the full show, that was the first show that I taped at the Magic Castle. It was the Friday. And it was the first time in like 100 shows that the guy would not ding my boob. He thought that that was just too much. His girlfriend was right there. He was a man of whatever, and he wouldn't do it. And everyone was like, "Do it!" You know, the whole audience was trying to get him to do it. His girlfriend said, "You're not getting out of this. You're gonna do it." And he was like, "No, I'm not gonna do it." And so I was like, "All right." And you can see it in the video. I said, "Okay," and I take it off, and I didn't shame him. I was just like, I made everybody applaud for him. And I went and I was like, okay, who, you know, I found this like super goth looking guy and I was like, he'll do it. and it turned out wonderful. I mean, that's why and of course in my head, I'm like, why of all shows, yeah. There's first show that I'm taping and the guy won't ding my boob. This is crazy. And then it was wonderful. And I think part of the reason it turned out so great as everyone was on, it wasn't uncomfortable. Everybody knew that it was okay. Mm-hmm. And then I got on stage and I put the things on and they knew that I wanted him to do it. And the guy just goes for it. You know, like he just like the goth guy just goes, just like, yep. And then he just won't stop. And then I, you know, and at a certain point I had to rein him in to play my game. Cause I'm the one in charge. I'm the teacher. Yeah. you got to do what I say or else this is chaos. But it was wonderful in the juxtaposition and the it was fun. It was just so – it turned out great. And that's why it's the show on Vimeo, is because I think that it was actually a wonderful, happy accident. I have recently – I think this is a really good point to bring this up. In one of my imaginary podcasts with you guys, we talked about this. So my imaginary like dream time, like we're like totally with Shavance, it's Shazam, and we're having a great time. This is better than my dreams, by the way. This is a dream come true. But so I took out. Okay, I don't want to get too in one of my imaginary podcasts. I got too intense about this, but I used to end my show. Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm just going to pull it. Okay. Too linear.
I used to end my show with the button of the, you know, fake out kiss.
Yeah.
And
so it, just for the listeners, in case you haven't seen that, if you're not part of the magic community, fake out kisses, it's an old clown gag from originated from, I think, about 1920s. That is the first joke book I've ever seen it referenced in, where you point to your cheek. A lot of guys do it. They shouldn't be. You point to your cheek so that the audience member will kiss you on the cheek, and then at the last minute you turn your face so that they plant the kiss right on your mouth. That's the bit we're referring to, just in case you don't know.
Gross.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah, super not cool, and I do it, and I was like, but it's funny. So I was doing that for a long time. I did that for most of, you know, like I only in the last year, maybe 2 years, I can't remember, but I took that out of my show. I had it in my, it was such a wonderful button. It made everybody burst out into laughter. And I think it was important to note that the intent behind it was really not about, it wasn't, you know, it was, we had gone through so much together, you know, yeah. we had fallen in love for crying out loud, you know, like at the very end, me just faking him out and getting a kiss felt nice. It didn't feel bad. But I had that, like, what finally, but I knew that I was like, it's a double standard. I can't keep it in if I don't think that it's right for a guy to keep it in. So I've got to take it out, but I was having trouble taking it out because it's such a great button. And it works so good for the context of my show. But then I had this experience.
Ooh.
Where the context changed for me because I was angry at my volunteer. Mm. And I couldn't wait to dominate him in that moment. And that was scary. That was like this moment of like, you know, when you have these moments, like I haven't had a panic attack, but I could see it from here. It's like, I haven't ever felt like a sexual predator, but I could see it from there. You know what I mean? I could see my anger and my frustration with how he was being, and that I couldn't, that he was kept trying to mess with me, was like causing this desire to dominate him. And not like normally I can dominate in these other ways that are much nicer and much more feminine, but this final moment where that kiss came, and it was a vengeful kiss. and it was, I had this moment where like, okay, it's gotta go. Like, I can't, that's not cool. You know, that's it. That I don't want that to be an option for me. And it was the first time that I'd ever felt that way. But it gave me this little insight as to, okay, that's okay. Got it. Message received. It's out. So I haven't done it ever since.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
That's an amazing story. Because that's just a reminder about how much, you know, that's such a, like a little version of the power exchange that, like, big sexual assault is about, right? Because that is exactly what that was. It was like, hey, you've been stealing my power this whole show, but I know there's a moment coming where I'm going to take something from you don't intend to give me.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I'm sorry, just like totally fascinated by that story.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those things that, like, we've talked about it in multiple episodes about how so much magic is meant as a power dominance over your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And is performed as such. Mm. And then you have one moment that you were like, it's fine. And then it was one moment that you're like, oh no, I don't want this power.
Yeah.
Take it away from me. Returning the Infinity Stones.
So I want to come back
to the bells. Wait, I went on a nerd rant.
I want to come back to the bells. So let's talk about this in terms of like elements. So at its base core, it's a fully fledged routine, but the bit is a stranger is touching your breasts.
Mm.
Now, the layers, I think there's like a lot of layers that make this safe. I would say layer one, it's a bra with a dress on top, with coconut bras on top, with bells on top. So
yes.
There's a four like fabric layer thing.
Mm.
Even the bells you've chosen, so you haven't chosen like honky bells where there would be a grabbing motion.
Yeah.
They can be dinged with an open hand.
Mm.
So there's something interesting to me that I immediately noticed about that is like someone can, you know, can ding it and like run away. And then the other thing is that at no point are you grabbing him, like your hands are down by your, this we talked about this in the Mike Hammer thing a little bit, is it's like your hands are down by your side, you're making a physical offer, but then the person is invited to come into that space and do it.
Mm.
And so, you know, their boundaries are very respected. They're not being forced to do anything they don't really want to do, except for the situational restraint of you're on stage. And like,
sure.
And I think that's part of why these layers are become more and more relevant when you get on stage, because the power shifts so much.
And I think that reminds me of a really great lesson that I learned in getting your volunteer. And it's you do a series of small yeses, and then they just become bigger, you know? So my first question is, when I'm holding, I get a top, like the way that I get my volunteer, which I came up with, which I was like, ah, thank God, is putting a tie on a guy. You put a tie on a guy and get him to come, you know, that's my way of getting him on stage, you know? And so I don't just put the tie on the guy. I hold the tie in front of him, and he goes, and he puts his head through the tie.
Wow.
So I'm not, you know, if he doesn't put his head through the tie, I don't use him.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first yes. So I get a first yes, and then, you know, I get him to, and he's ready to go usually right then. And I like him to stay, sit, and because I really like doing the, like, and then use it as kind of a bridle, which is a little, I don't know, it's a little dominant, but it's fun. I think it's fun. So
I think it's also fine because it, you know, you're, yeah, it's a subversion of a traditional power dynamic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if there are times where there is a bit of a double standard because it becomes a conversation about what the typical power dynamic is there.
Yeah. And I have heard people be offended by it, because I hear people go, oh, like I'm being, which my intention behind it is really just like, look, I'm going to be in control here, and then we're going to play a game and where I'm in control, you know, and, you know, you're pretty. So pretty. Yeah. She's such a pretty horse.
Also, he's already consented to being a part of what he knows in this relationship is going to be the submissive role. Yeah. You're the performer with the, although maybe not literally, you have the mic.
Yeah.
And so you have the power in the situation. So he's going, yeah, sure, go ahead, put the tie on me. That's not... Like, you could kill me in this moment if you really wanted to. And now he's already in. So if he's in with it, then... Yeah.
And I'm already, when I'm doing the first part, where I'm juggling and I'm flirting with a guy, I'm already vetting him. Mm. I'm already figuring out... Because I like it... It's my favorite when it's just one guy and I can just stick with him. Mm-hmm. But if I don't feel... If the guy's like, woo! Or like... can't look me in the eye, can't, like, one side of the spectrum or the other, then I go, okay, let's find another one. See, let's vet another guy.
Yeah.
And so I'll go through and I'll try and figure out who's the best guy based on their eye contact alone. Mm-hmm. And then I go into you know, that's why usually people are like, oh, do you ever get bad volunteers? And it's very rare that I get a volunteer that I can't work with because I have so many points of vetting them. You know, so
the term I used to use is you don't want the guy that wants to get picked. And you don't want the guy that doesn't want to get picked. You want the guy that wants to be the guy that wants to get picked.
Yeah.
Right. You want to show him what that's he's great. Capable of or show her what she's capable of. You want the person that's like, you know, the way the babies flirt, you know, where they like look at you and they're like, come play with me. And then they look away and they're like, no, don't, I'm scared of you. Yeah. Like that's, you want that like baby flirt level.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Oh, babies.
Babies.
I love it.
It's such a great routine and it's such a fantastic, you know, lesson in consent and safety and taking care of your volunteers because you really do push that edge, but you never push anyone over the edge.
No, no. And that's not my style either, you know. I think there are some people who do have a more aggressive style that I appreciate very much, and but they're... wizards with that. I'm just not. I gotta know that you're cool with what I'm doing, or else I can't do it. You know, that's just my foundation. So
yeah, I feel like this is episode one with Lindsay.
Because well, she's dressed. How many?
Dude, this is like
number 10 for me actually. But
it's the first one in real.
We barely got into what we have on our thing.
That's accurate though.
We've not. Nothing. We got.
I'm so excited.
I'm very happy with this episode, but also we got to none of the things. So,
I really like what we covered, though. You guys asked great questions. Fair. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Well, you're such a great guest. Okay.
No, you're great.
Jeff, maybe edit that out.
It's nope.
Too gross.
Keep it.
I love girls. Yay! I just love them.
We dig it.
Lightning round?
Lightning round. So we like to end all of our guest interviews with a fun lightning round.
Okay. Which you are probably very prepared for.
Actually, I should have. I should have. I probably did in the moments and had to rewind and reload. Anyway.
Half the questions will have been questions we've asked before, and the other half are usually ones that we just kind of like change it up. Try to answer as short and concise as possible because it's lightning. Also,
lightning.
This was an additional hour of Max Maven time. So answer how you see fit.
His lightning round was
an hour.
Extensive.
I love him.
We also then had a 4-hour lunch after it to discuss his answers of the lightning
round. It was so great.
That's not true, but that's what I feel like was supposed to happen.
I mean,
we both had to go.
You had to go. I spent another hour in that room. And then I had to fly to Australia. The only reason the conversation with Max ended was because I had to go to Australia.
That's wonderful.
Max is one of our favorites.
Yep.
Okay.
This that's will a great all sentence. Stay in.
The only reason I had to stop talking to Max Maven is because I had to go to Australia.
Exactly.
That's a great sentence.
Not terrible.
The bus to the airport. I remember standing there with my luggage and we're still talking and I'm like loading my luggage into the bus to the Magic Castle. Like, I have to go to another country now and do a run of shows.
Okay, bye. I love him.
Lightning round, you want to start?
Okay. What's your favorite magic and performance resource?
Right now YouTube. I mean, but originally it was Frank Olivier's VHS collection.
Great. I love that. Okay.
If you had to say, what is a favorite magic routine you've ever seen?
Probably either Suzanne's close-up routine or Liberty Larson's
Gypsy Thread.
Gypsy Thread. Aww. Yeah, that nice. Kills me every time.
Very nice. What are you reading or watching right now?
Let's see. What am I reading? I'm reading a book about how to sleep train your baby.
Exciting.
I just got in the mail The Me Without, which is written by Jacqueline Raposo. It's a new book that just came out, and it's all about taking away different things in your life and seeing how it changes your experience.
Right.
That's great.
Like Marie Kondo.
I very much recommend, if you haven't read it, Homo Sapiens, that book.
Okay.
This keeps coming up.
It's yeah. like
I
one
guess
of my.
We're I, reading that book.
I loved it. It was so. He just does such a great job at presenting historical and scientific information in a way that's just like, so good.
This makes me feel like we need to have like a Shazam book club.
We might have to have a Shazam book club because
we
want to
read
going.
Sapien. And anyway.
Oh, I already put a hold on it in the library.
All right. So what is your favorite gadget? Like any kind of tech gadget?
Ooh.
It could be as simple as a hanger. Like that, you know. Strainer with favorite, a suction cup base thing.
My favorite tech gadget. God.
Ugh. Do you want to skip it?
Maybe.
Okay.
My car?
That works. Yeah. Yes, that works.
I can talk and be on the phone and it's all in my car.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great.
Speakerphones.
How many times over the last year has someone asked you how are you able to handle your work-life balance? We were just asked this question and don't have children.
Yeah, and we were like, there is no such thing. I am only my job.
Yeah. I don't know.
Has it annoyed you yet is maybe the better lightning round question.
No, not really. I mean, okay. you know what really annoys me is when people ask me where Poe is. My son's name is Poe, Poesis. But if when people ask me who's looking after Poe or where is Poe when I'm working, it's really annoying because I'm like, you don't ask men that when they've had a baby. And I understand why, but it's still just kind of like, dude.
Check yourself.
Where do you think he is? Like what do you think's happening? Like he's in a room by himself watching television.
He's in the
That's
cop.
Ali Wong though. You're just like, you know, Ali Wong does a great oh my gosh, she's so great. The stand-up comic. If you haven't watched her specials, she's a great both of her specials she does Wicked Pregnant, and she's I love her so much that she does that's a great example of, you know, she has a bit about that where it's like, where do you think the baby is, you know? Who do you think is watching the baby? You know, it's just it's a very sexist question. Mm. So check yourself before you say that to a woman with a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
okay.
What I would say.
Is there a woman you would like to shout out, like a fantastic performer that you think isn't getting enough attention that you could use this platform to draw attention to?
Mm. Well, I kind of already did with my friend Jacqueline Raposo. Her book just dropped.
What's the book called?
Well, it was the Me Without.
Put it in the show notes.
Yep. Who's not getting enough attention? I feel like
wasn't pointing to me to go. Like, could you? Yeah.
No,
could
I was
you talk about.
She's going to do the next.
Yes.
Yeah.
Performer's not getting enough attention. That's an interesting question. I mean, I think Liberty Larson's getting plenty of attention, but I gotta say, I think she's an incredible entertainer. She's highly experienced, but she's also relatively, considering the breadth of one's career, she's at the beginning of it, and she's incredible. So,
yeah. Great. Yeah. What do you think needs to be done for Shazam to be obsolete? We're really looking to quit.
I can't quit you, podcast.
I can't quit you.
It's relevant. That's a very topical reference, I guess.
Yeah, I think once we feel like, I mean, I don't know. I think it's always going to be a unique thing to be a woman in the variety arts or, you know. I don't know. I think the It's funny, in my imaginary podcast, I also stumbled on these questions. So I'm glad, you know, imagination, reality, similar. I think that when we're not the minority is when it will be obsolete. I think that's when you're the minority, you've got to figure out how to navigate yourself in that particular situation and make it work for you, because it's set up to work for the majority. That's in that context, because this will make sense to them. So I think once there's enough of us, that I think there's a point when, like that Busker Festival, that it was like maybe a 60% women over men, you know, and that was it. I didn't feel like you would need a feminist podcast in that scenario, you know. I didn't feel like we needed to, you know, like, because there were just more of us. And so you didn't need, you know, the guys weren't taking too many liberties, and they weren't, you know, when women are the ones booking it, you know, that as long as you don't, you know, women can be, women can be nasty too, but mm-hmm. when there's other people booking it other than the normal, you know, men,
yeah.
I think that's it.
Any favorite Disney princess or Disney villain or Disney male lead or Disney animal friend?
Who's your favorite Disney character?
Does it have to be Disney? I guess Disney, yes.
I mean, if you wanted to say Swan Princess or Anastasia, or, I'm not going to hate
Or Thumbelina. Like, you know, within that, you know, fantasy.
Was The Secret of Nim Disney? No, it wasn't. Okay. Favorite Disney princess?
Or villain.
Or villain.
Or magical or friend, Side animal, cake. Unit.
Singing character. Or not.
I guess I'd have to go with...
I'm a terrible person who can't think of things. No, we're going to edit all the, like, things. Okay, great. You'll be so sharp.
Oh, yeah. You'll be so sharp. Okay.
You'll be like, oh, not, I know I gotta, right away. Like,
we're not going to do that.
Through... Yeah. I'm sure...
We never do.
Okay, what were some of my favorites?
I mean, do you want me to go through them?
Yeah,
I can start in 1940. So you're looking okay, right. at Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Okay.
You've got Sleeping Beauty. You've got Aurora, Prince Philip, yeah. the Three Fairies. You want to keep going on that movie?
No.
Just in movies in general. Maleficent is my favorite Disney character.
Because
she's super badass and has a raven. It's she's technically great. A crow, but everybody thinks it's a raven.
Right. Mulan, Pocahontas.
We're going out of sequential I'm order so
that's
now.
Fine. That's okay. fine.
More in modern times, you've got Tangled with Rapunzel,
right.
played by Mandy Moore. You've got Princess and the Frog.
Okay.
I'll be honest, I didn't see either of those movies.
Oh, they're both
kind of terrible.
Excellent. Brave. They're totally my cup of tea.
Right. You've got Merida and Brave.
We had a guest.
Go Disney Pixar.
We had so the person go, that character was modeled after.
We did have Virginia. It was cool. We're just talking now.
We're just
okay. I can do I loved Monsters Inc. I love
that's great. So Sully,
Sully. Yeah.
Did you like Monsters Inc. and Monsters University?
I didn't see Monsters University yet.
It's cute.
It's really cute.
Yeah, it's cute.
I just loved that con. I just thought that was Pixar is just so great. They're so. I loved that concept. I thought that was a really well executed, unique, great thing.
After watching that movie, I was like, the next pet I get is named Boo. 100%
support that. Yeah, great. Big dogs or little dogs?
Oh gosh, I have a big dog. Love the big dog, but I've had a little dog, and I actually really—it's like everything you get out of a big dog, but much more manageable package. Not as good at home security. So I mean, I'm a both kind of person, which is totally cheating. But I'd say if I had to choose, probably little dog.
Perfect. Brownies or cookies?
Cookies.
Do you like chocolate chip cookies?
Love chocolate chip cookies.
Cool. Mm.
Especially, I mean, if they're cold, not as into it, but when they're warm.
Like straight out of the oven?
Straight out of the oven.
When you, like, go to, like, break them?
Not, yeah.
And the chocolate is, like...
Kind of not as into them if they're not warm.
So yeah. Good. I feel you. Last question. Out of all of the episodes of Shazam you've listened to, what's your favorite moment or favorite episode or favorite anything?
You are the only guest we've been able to ask this to.
You could also mention one that didn't happen and happened in your dreams if you want.
You'd be like, one time.
In
my dreams.
I really loved your business episode. I got a lot out of that episode. Business basics. Every time I see it, I always say it like that. I'm like, business basics.
So do we.
I also loved the Max Maven, and I loved the Why Women Are Terrible. I thought that was a really great conversation.
Yay.
I'm failing at answering the question properly. But I loved the concept that you had. I hadn't ever heard of it before. I mean, and it seems like you were the one that brought it to people's attention, of the hypnosis issue. And I've never seen a hypnosis show. I don't know. I actually have no context. But I was aware that hypnosis shows were very popular in the college market, because I was in the college market. And I had never thought of that before. But that yes, absolutely. Of course. That's so, and I think that's so cool about what you guys are doing, is that you're taking, you know, things that have just been, and you're shaking them up and going like, really? Let's look at it from this angle. And the fact that it's in college campuses is a primary place for hypnosis shows. And when I was, I don't know what the connection is completely, but I know that my performer's insurance would not, like they said, we will no longer cover hypnosis shows. So I don't know why, but I would assume that it's because this is a problem, that this is an issue. And with college, I mean, college campuses are still just like, they're in the dark ages in terms of protecting women and educating men. And, you know, they have not really budged in a long time. And like, they haven't budged. Still a lot of issues with rape and on college campuses and consent. And so that blew my mind. I'd never heard that concept before. And that was so cool. So I really appreciated that. And the way you said it, I was just like, bam. It was so cool. I loved it. Yeah.
If you're curious, that article, which is called One Little Pill, is actually available on the Shazam website. If you go back through the blog section, we did post that article on there, as well as there's a few other articles. We write articles now. Mm. So go to the shazampod.com. I mean, well,
we write articles and collect data.
I'm so tired.
Yeah.
You're not tired. You're inspired.
We're grateful.
You're grateful. Exactly.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up. I was really proud of that concept.
As you should be. I thought it was incredible.
It came after like 6 years of watching hypnosis shows and going, I feel icky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. And it took a really long time to go, I get it.
Mm.
Yeah. But I don't know all the answers. It's just one perspective.
Absolutely. But isn't it interesting that they are primarily in colleges?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Ding, ding, ding. Anyway.
Very interesting. Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh my gosh. Dream come true, guys. Dream come true.
For us too.
This is pretty great. We were really, really excited about this. And so hopefully you've realized that we only ignored your message because we were busy.
Again, the rational side of my brain was like, they're going to talk to each other. And as soon as they're ready, they're going to contact me. And the fangirl in me was like, what did I say? I said the wrong thing. You should talk to them about what you said and apologize. You should apologize. Like, no, I'm not going to apologize. I did nothing wrong.
Yes, you must have.
Anyway.
For anybody who has messaged us and not received a reply, Kayla and I, you know, wait till we get together to like go through all the messages.
My rational brain and professional brain absolutely knew that was the case, but my fangirl brain, crazy girl, you are
well loved by Shazam, and now by the whole audience. This is one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. I'm so happy. This is great, because that one that will have come out before this about numbers is incomprehensible.
It's really bad. I received a package in the middle of it.
And she just went and got it. Yeah.
I can't wait to hear about it. I'm so curious. I'm like, numbers? What do you mean?
Oh yeah. We'll tell you in T-15 seconds.
So thank you so much for joining us for this very special episode of Shazam. And remember,
I just want to let you guys know that I asked the cookies or brownies question because Harrison's making chocolate chip cookies right now and they're coming out of the oven in just a minute.
Kayla.
So I just want to let you know that that's what's happening.
Wait, are they feminist cookies?
No, they're vegan, gluten-free.
Yes, they are. Amanda's cooking them for you. Thank you very much.
Oh! And on that note, we will see you guys.
I have nothing else to say.
Next week. Thank you so much.
Play Bye. Music.
This podcast is funded in part through support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Thank you so much for helping us out, you guys. We really appreciate it.